It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Well, what it comes down to is that a lot of these people who are closer to the poverty line really didn't have an opportunity to get coverage like this before. So for a lot of people, it's including them in their healthcare system in a way that wasn't even imaginable for them before, and that is exclusively due to economic constraints. So when you think about affordability and why individuals didn't have coverage prior, you know, this is a really unique opportunity.
With the first deadlines for obtaining health insurance under the Affordable Care Act fast approaching, Affordable Care Act navigator Amelia Goldsmith explains what you need to know about getting health insurance if you are uninsured. And during this week's News You Can Use, we have everything you need to set the record straight on Obamacare. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 222, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Someone may say, Obamacare isn't working, people aren't enrolling. You say, actually, more than 1 million people are shopping in the marketplace online. Although the website problems are inexcusable, enrollment will only go up as the website functions better. People have to take their time researching options before purchasing health insurance. Someone may say, we gave Obamacare a chance and it doesn't work, we should just repeal the law. You say, actually, opponents haven't given the law a chance. Instead, they've worked from day one to undermine its success. Parts of the law need to be changed, but right now, we should improve the law, not tear it down and force us to go back to the old, broken system. Someone may say, these health insurance cancellations show Obamacare will leave people worse off. You say, unlike in the past, when health insurance companies could drop your policy or deny you coverage for any reason, millions of Americans now have access to better coverage at affordable prices. Most people who are losing their cut-rate insurance policies will be able to find better deals for better coverage in the marketplace and will get financial subsidies to purchase policies that have better protections than they had before. Someone may say, America has the best health care in the world. Why break it? You say, we have amazing health care providers in this country, but our system of accessing that care was broken. Before Obamacare, 1 in 5 people applying on the individual marketplace were denied coverage. 43% of people had a pre-existing condition and were charged more, and women were charged 150% more than men. Now, insurance companies can't deny coverage due to a pre-existing condition or discriminate based on health status or gender. Someone may say, Medicaid already is too expensive. We can't afford to expand it. You say, expanding Medicaid to provide health coverage to 400,000 Virginians will save our state money, create jobs, and lower health care costs because we won't have to pay for the cost of the uninsured in emergency rooms. Someone may say, requiring businesses to provide coverage for contraception is an attack on religious freedom. You say, the policy protects religious liberty and women's health. Nearly 99% of women have relied on contraception, but more than half have struggled to afford it. religiously affiliated organizations won't have to provide birth control coverage if they object, but your employer doesn't get veto power over your access to health care. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the offices of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we are talking with one of our healthcare navigators, Amelia Goldsmith, who has finished up her second month of work here and has some important information about Obamacare and purchasing insurance under the Virginia Health Insurance Marketplace. Welcome to the show, Amelia.
Thank you.
Tell us, first of all, what is an Affordable Care Act navigator? What is your role and purpose?
Well, there's been a lot of information in the news about the Affordable Care Act, but unfortunately, a lot of that's been about what's been going on in Washington and hasn't actually provided a lot of people with a roadmap as to what to actually do for themselves and their families. So we're here as a resource to answer questions about what's going to be different for individuals, and we can also provide enrollment services.
If you have health insurance now, do you need to be contacting an Affordable Care Act navigator?
You can contact a navigator if you currently have health insurance. In order to be eligible for the marketplace, you have to not have access to affordable employer-based coverage, which means if you have coverage through your employer and you're paying more than 9.5% of your annual income, then you may be able to find a much more affordable plan through the marketplace, and you could contact a navigator to see if you're eligible for that. Additionally, if you currently have an individual policy, you can get in touch with us if you want to see what you may be eligible for and see if you could get something which may be cheaper.
So give us a list. Who should be contacting a navigator at this point?
Well, anyone with questions is welcome to call our offices. We are just a resource. We can help individuals decide if they want to change health plans just by giving them additional information. We can't tell individuals to choose certain plans, but what we can do is we can just give basic health policy education and provide assistance and enrollment more generally. So that can also include whether or not people are eligible.
So how would people go about contacting an Affordable Care Act navigator?
Well, it depends on where you're located in Virginia, but if you go to www.enroll-virginia.com, you can actually see a map and you can see the contact information for the navigators that are in your area. Additionally, if you're in the Richmond area, you can call my office line directly. My number is 804-200-6035.
Okay, very good. Well, now that it is the beginning of December, there are some important deadlines coming up. What are they?
Well, initially, the first deadline to receive coverage on January 1st was December 15th, but they've extended that to December 23rd. So you could even sign up on the 22nd, find a plan that you like, and pay your first premium. And as long as you've paid your premium before December 23rd, your coverage will begin on January 1st.
Now, what if uninsured people have not enrolled in a plan and paid the first month's premium by this new deadline date of December the 23rd? What happens then?
Well, if an individual tries to sign up for a plan after December 23rd, let's suppose they sign up on December 27th, then their coverage will begin on February 1st. So if an individual signs up after February 15th, then their coverage will begin March 1st. So it's staggered monthly by the 15th, and individuals will still have an opportunity to sign up throughout open enrollment. Not everyone actually has to sign up for coverage. There are some people who are exempt. That include people whose religious beliefs require them to use alternative medical services. There are also individuals who, Native American communities who are federally recognized, don't have to sign up, or individuals who have faced economic hardship, and that can be a variety of things. But as long as they can prove economic hardship, they do not have to sign up. And individuals who make below a tax filing threshold are not required to get insurance and won't be charged with the individual mandate.
So it sounds like there are a number of exceptions to the individual mandate. But if you are, in fact, covered by the individual mandate and you're required to have insurance, is there any harm to being enrolled and paying that first month's premium after December 23rd, or for that matter, in January, in February, or in March?
Well, it really just depends when you want your coverage to begin. If you need coverage by January 1st, you know, I would recommend, you know, submitting an application prior to the December 23rd deadline and seeing if there's a plan that works really well for you. If it isn't an urgent issue and you can receive coverage in February or March, and it doesn't matter that much if you can go off of another individual policy and really just start at any time, you can do that. It really just depends on, you know, your individual needs and when you'd like your coverage to begin.
Now, we have heard a lot about the computer problems at the healthcare.gov website, and there was a promise to fix them by the end of November. In your experience, has there been improvement?
Yeah, the website is steadily improving. It has been in the media a lot, and there have been a lot of people who have had trouble with the website. But fortunately, there have been steady improvements, and I think that once the website is up and running, I think the benefit of having affordable health coverage will outweigh the initial inconvenience and frustration that a lot of people are experiencing that.
So what are the steps that people actually go through at healthcare.gov to actually enroll in a plan and pay that first month's premium? Can you take us through that sort of step-by-step process?
Well, when you sign into healthcare.gov, the first thing you do is you create an account. So you just create a username and password and connect it to your email.
Okay, and then what happens after that? After you've created that account, what is the next step?
So after creating an account, you begin an application and you submit information about yourself and your family and your household size, and that depends on how you file for taxes. If you file for taxes as a family of three and you're only applying for coverage for yourself, you still need to include that information. After you submit all of this information, you will receive your eligibility results, which will also include if you're eligible for premium tax credits. And the tax credits are available for families that make between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty line. So a lot of people are eligible for these tax credits, which will help pay their monthly premiums. So after you see your results, if you see a plan that works for you and your family, you can select that plan and you can pay your first premium. And after that, you would receive coverage at the next starting date.
So when you actually start shopping for health insurance, you actually start seeing the plans. Tell us, how many plans do you usually see and what type of information is provided on each plan?
Well, there's a lot of variation among individuals. It depends on what plans are offered in your area. I've heard of people being offered plans that, you know, maybe 10 plans, but I've also heard people being offered 50 different plans. You know, there's a ton of variety here. And so once you actually see the plans that you're eligible for, you can see what your monthly premiums would be, what your deductibles would be, what kind of things the plans cover, and you would also be able to see what provider network. And so that means the doctors and the hospitals that you can go to that participate in your insurance plan. And so there's going to be a little button that says provider network, and you can actually click on that and you can see that information. Additionally, you can always contact the insurer directly or your doctor to just verify that you can continue to see them or that a clinic that's near you can take this coverage.
So that provider network button, is that basically how you determine whether a particular doctor or a particular hospital is covered by a plan that you're looking at?
Yes, it is. And like I said, you can also contact the insurer just to verify and learn more about the provider network.
So this sounds like something that you might have to make several visits to the healthcare.gov website in order to really do intelligent shopping. Do you find that to be the case?
Yes, actually. And although we're still at the beginning of open enrollment, you know, it's only been the first couple of months, I know that when they did this in Massachusetts, it took most individuals between 6 to 12 visits to actually choose a plan.
So when you are looking at these competing policies, what are the factors that people need to keep in mind as they shop?
One of the things to consider is how frequently you really think you'll be going to the doctor. Do you think you might just get a checkup? Do you think you will be going frequently because you have a chronic condition? Or do you like to go to the doctor whenever you have any smaller concerns? You know, so it really is different for all individuals. And if you think that it is very unlikely that you will be visiting your doctor in the coming year, it may be best to get a plan that has lower premiums, but if you actually have medical costs, you may be required to pay a little bit more. So if it is unlikely that you would be spending a lot of time going to the doctor, or if you have a very low-risk lifestyle and you think a medical emergency is fairly unlikely, then you know you may want to get a plan that covers a lower percent of your out-of-pocket costs. So it really depends on how frequently you think you'll actually be going to the doctor. It really varies per individual. If there's someone in your household that is, you know, diabetic, for instance, or has a very serious allergy and the possibility of a medical emergency is something that you live with, you may want to get a plan that would cover more of an emergency visit, for instance. So there's so much variety. There are a lot of differences, and the plans spell out their differences fairly well on the website. And so it's something that you can take into consideration with your family and your individual needs.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier that there are tax credits that are available to people whose incomes are between 100% of poverty and 400% of poverty. So You also mentioned that these tax credits that people will receive depend on their household size and their household income. Without getting overly technical, how does that work?
So if you're between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty line, you will receive tax credits that will help you pay your monthly premiums. So for instance, if you are an individual and you make about $13,000 or $14,000 a year, and you're closer to 100%, but above 100% of the federal poverty line, you'll get quite a few tax credits to help cover your individual policy. I've met with individuals who ended up paying $20 a month who were just above the federal poverty line because they, you know, maybe their plan cost $7,000 to $9,000 a year, and the federal government covers $8,000 of that. So they end up, you know, paying $1,000 over the course of the entire year and getting premiums between, you know, maybe $17 to $30 a month. You know, I've seen a lot of variety, and it really is different per individual. But especially for people that are closer to the poverty line, these tax credits are very helpful.
So how do you go about estimating next year's household income? And is it better for you to overestimate a little or underestimate a little, or does it matter at all?
Well, it does matter. It's important to try to give the most accurate estimate possible, and you need to do that as honestly as you can. You do have to sign an agreement at the end of the application that says that you didn't misrepresent any of the information that you provided. But if you make less money than you thought you were going to, than you initially declared on your application, then you could get additional tax credits when you file for your taxes. But if you overestimate, then you may have to pay some of the money back, and you may get fewer tax credits. And you would only have to pay money back if you decided to get your tax credits on a monthly basis, which is an option. People can choose to get it every month so that they can help pay their premiums, or they can do that at the end of the year. And I think a lot of people will opt to do it on a month-by-month basis. So if you were one of those individuals who did that and you ended up making a lot more, then you would actually be responsible for paying some of that money back.
Now, earlier you mentioned some of the very low premiums that you're seeing for people who are just above 100% of poverty. What are some other premiums that you are seeing for people who maybe are at 150% or 200% or even higher than that? Again, what are the costs of these policies, especially with these tax credits that are available?
Well, like I said, there's an enormous amount of variety. You know, I've met with some individuals who end up paying $150 a month, and it's something that they make enough money that it isn't an enormous burden. And there are safeguards against individuals paying more than a certain percent of their annual income. So they have designed this in a way that they're trying to protect individuals from paying too much for coverage.
So when they say this is the Affordable Care Act, are you finding these premium prices to be affordable for people? More importantly, are the people you're helping finding these premium prices to be affordable?
Well, what it comes down to is that a lot of these people who are closer to the poverty line really didn't have an opportunity to get coverage like this before. So for a lot of people, it's including them in their healthcare system in a way that wasn't even imaginable for them before. And that is exclusively due to economic constraints. So when you think about affordability and why individuals didn't have coverage prior, you know, this is a really unique opportunity.
Now, are people better off just opting out of health coverage altogether and just paying the tax penalty in the year 2015?
Well, the tax penalty in the year 2015, it'll be $95 for an individual. So I can see how some people would weigh that against paying, you know, $30 a month and see that, you know, immediately it would cost less money to pay the mandate this year. But what I will say is that the leading cause of bankruptcy in the United States is an unanticipated medical expense, and that it is economically reckless to not have that support. And it can be very scary for families to not know if they have an emergency, if they're hit by a car, if something bad happens to them. It's just so good to know that they have that support. And it's something that I think that all people deserve to have. And so although, you know, $95 may not be an enormous economic burden in the first year, this is something that will increase every year. It will go up to about, I believe it was something like $425 for an individual in the next year. So the penalties will increase, and it'll get to a point where it will actually cost less money to pay for your health coverage than to decide to pay the penalty instead.
Now, one of the issues that's been in the news a lot has been canceled individual health insurance policies. Are you seeing people coming in with those canceled health insurance policies? And if so, are there better plans that are available at a reasonable cost on the marketplace?
A lot of people have had plans canceled, and that's something which has been an inconvenience for a lot of people. And, you know, Obama did come out and state that depending on the state that you live in, you are allowed to keep your health plan under the Affordable Care Act. I believe that many people will probably want to just continue their plans that were canceled because it's something that's worked for them in the past. But it's also important to know that the reason that these plans are canceled is that they do not provide minimum essential coverage. And so that means that, you know, the plan may have been canceled because it didn't provide proper support for an individual in the instance in which they get sick. So health insurance really is meant to safeguard people in the event that there is a catastrophe or they become ill. And so, you know, many people may not have had to think about what would happen in this hypothetical situation where they became, you know, very dependent on participating in the medical system and using its resources. And so they didn't have to think about the economic implications of not having that proper support. So it is something that's important to note. If your plan was canceled and you're interested in potentially looking at the marketplace and seeing what you're eligible for, it's something important to keep in mind.
And again, how would people go about contacting an Affordable Care Act navigator?
You can visit Enroll Virginia's website. So that is enroll-virginia.com. And you can look and see which navigators are available in your region. Or if you live in the Richmond, Mechanicsville, Chesterfield, or Petersburg area, you're welcome to call me in my office, which is 804-200-6035. And additionally, I'd be happy to refer you to a closer navigator if I'm not in your service area.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Amelia Goldsmith. She is one of the Affordable Care Act navigators at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, talking about the important deadlines that are coming up to get health insurance through Virginia's health insurance marketplace. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Nursing home patients and residents of assisted living facilities are entitled to be treated with dignity and compassion. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when private attorney Josh Silverman explains how negligent nursing home and assisted living caregivers can be held accountable for their wrongful actions. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.